I need help to prove my innocence. If you look at the evidence, there's no forensics that links me to the case.
Have you ever talked explicitly about whether he did it?
It's just impossible, really. It's just not in his nature to do something so awful.
He's had to walk down here, meet her,
yes,
kill her, put her in the boots.
Yeah. It doesn't seem at all likely to me.
The 9:30 CCTV, which the police said was your car coming out onto the main road.
I can guarantee it's not my car.
There's a big difference, in my view, between a Shogun and a Range Rover. Could this be the defendant's vehicle? I really don't know.
I know Aura. Well, she was my best friend.
So what did she tell you about this other man?
She was definitely worried about something. Something was wrong and I could feel it.
I just tell you one more time, if there is something which is significantly different to what you've told me, that I would have real difficulty with carrying on with your case.
I did not murder Paula.
Where are we in the investigation?
The prosecution say the CCTV evidence put Roger Kearney near the scene of the crime. There is still, however, an image of an unidentifiable 4x4 car, which Roger says is his. If true, that could actually support his alibi. Secondly, a friend of Paula's, a very good long-standing friend of hers, is adamant that Paula was having a relationship with somebody other than Roger Kearney at the same time. And, importantly, that Paula was really scared of this man. I don't know how reliable that witness was. She didn't say anything like this at the time of the trial, and I haven't found anyone else who says that Paula was having another secret relationship. So it's not proof, it's just hearsay. What I've got to go and do now, I think, is look at some of the other significant evidence in the case. I want to look at the way Roger behaved in the days after Paula went missing.
Mrs. Poulton's car was found 11 days after she'd disappeared.
The court heard there was no forensic evidence, no blood, no hair, no fingerprints linking Mr. Kearney with the murder. And nobody saw him murder Mrs. Poulton. It wasn't long before police discovered she'd been having an affair. They interviewed Mr. Kearney. On several occasions in that interview, he referred to her in the past tense. And after she disappeared, his calls to her mobile phone soon ended.
What's happening today?
Roger's about to call me. I want to ask him particularly about his contact with Paula when she was missing. He didn't text her to say, "Where are you? Are you all right?" You know, she was missing for 11 days and yet no text from him asking where she was. So I want to ask him about that. And the second thing I want to ask him about is how he referred to Paula during the police interviews, because he kept referring to her in the past tense. And again, this is just at the time before her body was actually found, which suggests he knows she's dead already. So I want to ask him about that. Hello, Inside Justice.
Hello, Louise. It's Roger.
Hello, Roger. How are you? When have we got till?
Oh, about 5 past, unfortunately.
Oh, OK. All right, I shall cut to the chase really quickly then. What I wanted to do was to ask you about what happened after Paula went missing on the Friday night. Can you tell me when you first found out she was missing?
Well, she didn't turn up for work on Saturday.
Right.
At the football stadium. And then I tried to phone her, got no response.
But she was missing now at this stage. Surely you were worried about her?
Not particularly. Not at that stage, no.
Why not?
Because I thought she was out drinking.
But for 3 months, you speak to her on the phone pretty much every day.
Yep.
And then she goes missing for 5 days or so, And in that time, you only send one text and you forward some jokey emails. No phone calls, nothing saying, are you OK? Can you see why that looks suspicious to people?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I did try the phone, but it just wasn't perfect. I don't know whether her phone was not working or... Well, obviously it wasn't working, but I didn't know whether she'd lost her phone or what.
No, but then why not send her another message? You don't call her or send her a message again, even after a whole week. I mean, she wasn't found for 11 days, was she? So you were intimate and close with her. You say you cared about her, and yet even after a week, you weren't sending her any messages or trying to make any contact, just saying, are you all right? Everybody's worried here. That is odd. That is very strange.
You think so? Well, I was annoyed with her.
Mm-hmm.
For getting me involved. When the police turned up and said she was missing, I was angry with her because... basically having to disclose the fact that we've been having an affair.
But when the police interview you, they talk to you about things and you keep on giving them past tense answers.
Yeah.
And I've been through all that interview and you keep saying things that you say, I used to see her down the gym, I know she was quite keen on the two of us, I think she wanted me to move in, I did like Paula a lot. You're not saying, I think she's a great woman, I like her now. It's all past tense. Yeah. Why did you do that? Nobody thought she was dead. She was dead at that stage, apparently, from you in these interviews.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure what the questions were.
I've got the questions.
Yeah.
I thought you would say to me, I don't know how it was put to me, they say to you, tell me about Paula. And what you know about her.
Right.
Tell me everything you know. And directly as a response to that, you talk about her in the past tense.
Yeah. And I said to them, because they said that to me, and I said yes, because I was angry as far as I was concerned, but the relationship was over.
Right.
I'm sorry, but I have to go now.
OK.
One thing I wanted to say to you, from what you said for the last time we spoke, was the fact that you were concerned that if it came out that I actually killed Paula sometime in the future, that it would make you look bad.
It would.
Yeah, I understand that. If you actually feel that I possibly could have done, I wouldn't blame you if you dropped my case at all. But I assure you, I don't think you'll find any evidence to support the police. And I promise you that I did not kill Paula. That's all I can say.
Okay, are you okay? You're not wavering from that at all. Are you in any way encouraging me to drop your case?
No, only if you feel that.
No, I'm asking you what you are saying to me, Roger.
I would like you to carry on.
You want me to carry on with the case? Are you trying to find a way to tell me that you were involved in Paula's murder?
No. But I'm just saying, if you think that I must go because the officer's getting a bit...
Okay. All right. Okay. But you're still telling me you did not kill her?
No, I did not.
Okay. All right, Roger.
We were supposed to be banged up at 10 past, so...
Okay. All right. That was a particularly funny end, difficult end, because I thought for one moment that he was going to tell me that he was involved in the murder. And then that... But he then immediately went on to say, no, I did not have anything to do with killing her at all. I don't know what to make of what he just said. I don't know. I don't know. If it was to come out that I killed Paula, you know, that's an odd phrase, isn't it, for somebody to use if they're saying they haven't done it? Why would he use language like that? Why doesn't he just say, I didn't do it? I didn't do it. There's never going to be any evidence that I killed Paula because it doesn't exist. Because I didn't kill her, so therefore there can't be evidence. That I'd understand, that I can relate to. That's, you know, a nice, clear way of talking. So, but he doesn't, does he? He sort of dances around things in a way that I find unsettling. I think there are lots of unanswered questions about the case. I think that there must be evidence of who killed Paula and... You know, really good, solid, objective evidence of who carried out this horrible murder. And that evidence currently hasn't seen the light of day. Now we're going to go and look at some of the forensic elements of the case, because for me there are some aspects to it that just don't add up. The prosecution say that he got into the car next to her and stabbed her repeatedly while she was sitting in the driver's seat. But when I look at the crime scene photos, there's hardly any blood on the front seats, which is where they said she was killed. I just don't understand how you could be stabbed 7 times and there'd be no blood or very little blood left in the front of the car. So I need to understand that. And in the boot of the car, there's a strange thing. There's a pool of blood found on a travel rug. And that doesn't fit with how her body was found. So I think I need some information on what the post-mortem report can tell us about the murder.
Most of my cases over the last 40 years have been for the police. You have to go into a case with an open mind because you have to think of how that person was killed, what the circumstances were, whether they fit with somebody's account of how they were killed, or the number of injuries, where they're placed, how deep they are, all that kind of thing can tell you a great deal about what has happened. A dead body can give up a lot of secrets.
OK, so can we just talk through to begin with then?
OK.
There, thanks. The prosecution case then was she was in the driver's seat, the attacker was sitting next to her.
Mm.
Does that all fit?
Yes, it does, yeah.
Are there any other scenarios that could also fit with the evidence?
Well, there are other possibilities. She has 7 stab wounds to the actual torso.
So they thought this one was the fatal wound, is that right?
It's gone into the left lung and cut through one of the major arteries of the lung, the pulmonary artery. So it's done a lot of damage.
Yeah.
It was quite wide because it went in an angle from left to right.
Okay, so that how would you be? So that would be.
Well, that would be about the... here, like this,
right.
This kind of direction.
Okay.
And what happened was it went deep into the lung. Her breathing would have been laboured. She would have, may well have been coughing. There would have been some blood around which come from her mouth.
I keep being struck by the fact that there isn't very much blood in the front at all.
No, there wasn't blood there, you're absolutely right.
Nothing particularly that seems to be saying it's inside this front of this car where the attack is actually taking place.
If we're just basing this purely on the actual injuries, there's nothing to say that those injuries could not have been done outside the car. Most probably in a standing position rather than a sitting position, standing outside the car.
Oh, really? Do the wounds lead you to believe it's more likely the person was standing, the victim was standing?
They would both have had to have been standing, yep.
The prosecution have always said that he got into her car and stabbed her repeatedly while sitting in the front seat. But our pathologist said that actually both the attacker and the victim might have been standing during the murder. That could only happen outside the car. It's only a possibility, but if that was the case, it seems highly unlikely to me that it happened on that particular road. That's a really busy road. No one saw her being attacked there. No one heard her scream. I need to go and talk to a blood pattern analysis expert. She's been working on lots of tests, trying to work out whether or not Paula Portman was definitely murdered in the car. That's the key question.
Bloodstains allows us to interpret and to define how that blood came to be at a crime scene. The blood can almost give a narrative as to what went on. If I sustain an injury, which, for example, to my neck, then blood may spurt from my body, and that will create a very distinctive pattern. My role is not to determine whether an individual is guilty or not guilty, but to be able to present a very sort of balanced view on the forensic science.
It's just over there, look.
So that is the same make and model then?
It is, yeah.
Brilliant.
Peugeot 206.
Yeah.
Okay. The scientist at the time described that the interior of the car was examined for blood staining, and she says that moderate blood staining was detected on the inside surface of the window handle and door of the driver's side. Small areas of blood staining were found on the driver's seat, the indicator, the steering wheel.
So it seems to me, looking at the photographs on where the blood is, there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of it apart from those bits that you've
That's
mentioned.
Right.
Is that surprising?
Not to me, really. The absence of heavy blood staining, let's say, doesn't mean that she wasn't attacked here.
OK.
Because she was wearing very heavy clothing, she had multiple layers of clothing, so that it's entirely possible that she could have sustained those injuries without enormous bloodshed.
So do you think she was killed in the front of the car?
Not necessarily. None of it is described as being spatter.
Right.
So it's indicative, really, of there being sort of contact blood staining throughout. Small areas of blood staining were found on the driver's seat, the indicator, the steering wheel, the bottom edge of the gear stick, the dashboard on the passenger side, and the outside lower edge of the glove box. These are all surfaces that one would naturally touch if kind of, you know, moving around in the car.
Or driving it.
Or driving it, precisely.
So is the fact that blood was found on the steering wheel suggested that somebody wet with blood has driven the car?
It could be.
Is that likely then, do you think, to be the attacker?
It could very well be. It's certainly something that should be considered, and it's something that we can't entirely exclude.
What about the blood on the travel rug that's in the boot? Have you got any thoughts on that?
I've got a photograph. So it'll just give us a kind of representation of items as they were in the boot.
Yeah.
And her position was kind of on her left.
Yes, laying fetal.
In a fetal sort of position in the boot. There was heavy blood staining found on the travel rug. And there was blood on her face, which I've depicted onto this mannequin's head. And what we see here is her head has been in contact with something heavily soaked with blood.
Right.
And my view is that it fits pretty well with the staining that was found on the blanket.
Right.
If I was to put you in the boot and I sort of scooped you up with my arms behind your knees and behind your shoulder and put you in, you'd obviously be quite heavy, but I almost might sort of roll you in.
Yes.
Which would satisfy.
It would, that would fit, wouldn't it? How does she then end up completely flipped over in that fetal position?
All she needs to do is to move or be moved onto her left side.
Right.
But it could potentially be that the car's moved forward and caused her to rock back.
Yeah.
As the car lurches forward, it creates that backward motion and she's tipped across. But again, I can't say with any certainty either one, but I'm just trying to express that all of these things are possibles.
Yes. Well, the prosecution have always said the murder took place here, immediately after she went missing. But now we have two scientists who say that actually things could be quite different. The pathologist says that she could have been killed while she was standing up outside the car. The blood pattern analysis expert said that the blood on the steering wheel and the gear stick might suggest the car was driven by the killer after Paula was stabbed.
So the question is, does all this forensic evidence mean that she was killed somewhere else? Did the killer put Paula's body in the boot, drive to Duncombe Road with bloody hands, then dump the car and walk away? That's a possibility. In fact, that's exactly what people thought when she was first discovered.
Paula Poulton's car was discovered yesterday afternoon by a routine police patrol car. Paula Poulton went missing on Friday, October the 17th. There had been no other sightings of her or her car until yesterday. Detectives need to know where Paula's car has been since Friday the 17th. They also need to know how long it had been parked in Duncombe Road.
Prosecution brought forward witnesses who said they saw Paula's car parked here for every day of the 11 days that Paula was missing. But then there were other witnesses. They said they were sure the street was empty on certain days after she went missing. How long the car's at the train station is really key, because the entire prosecution case revolves around Paula being murdered on this road sometime before 10 o'clock on the Friday night when she went missing. The police agree that after that, Roger is either at work or he's not in the area. He can't have done the murder. Who do you believe? Well, the prosecution brought forward another piece of evidence at trial. And they say it would prove that she was killed here and that the car never moved after the murder. Right. So, how do we know that the murder happened at the station where her body was found in the boot? According to the prosecution, she's been murdered in the front of the car and she's brought round to the back of the car, and somewhere down low she's dropped, and then some blood came off of her and flicked onto this wheel. So there's blood here, in this place and here, one, two points across that wheel. And also in the wheel arch here, I'll do a really basic diagram. So this is your wheel arch, right, and here's your car tyre. So the experts found there was blood here and here and here. So that all was a nice straight line. Being like this, all lining up with that fixed wheel arch, told the experts that the car had not moved since the blood got on the tyre. But if you look at the local news footage, which was filmed at the time, I think you can see a problem with that.
Paula Poulton's black Peugeot car, her body apparently discovered in the boot, has been hidden by a white forensic tent.
Now the black Peugeot is on the point of being taken away. Forensic officers have been conducting one last search of the immediate area before this road is finally reopened.
The car had been put on the tow truck, and once it was up on that tow truck, that's when the experts spotted that there was blood on this tyre. The recovery truck guy said the handbrake was on, the wheels did not turn, they merely slid along the ground. I don't think what the recovery truck driver said about the wheels only sliding and not moving is right. Nice to see you.
Yes, and you.
Shall I go straight through?
Yeah, you
thanks can. Very much. Cheers. One particular area is all to do with whether or not Paula was killed at the scene, whether it all happened there at the station road, as the police have always said, and then immediately put in the boot and left there for the whole 11 days. And that made us, that sort of prompted us to look then at what the evidence was like on the wheel of the car, because it's the blood on the wheel that really totally nails it for everybody.
Right, OK.
That's all good evidence and that all fits really well, providing the car wheel was in the same position on the road as when it was on the truck. Now, this is going to require some concentration because it's quite hard to see.
Okay.
So this is the vehicle being recovered.
The wheel moved. Did I see that, or... Definitely moving. Oh, my God.
The wheel that we can see that's moving is the front wheel.
Is that the one that had the blood?
No, the one that had the blood on it is the rear wheel. If the rear wheel
did the recovery guy say that none of the wheels moved?
The recovery truck guy says the wheels, plural, weren't turning. The wheels, plural, therefore, were dragged along the ground. And they were very certain about that. And they said, and I've got, in their statement, they talk about how there's no movement whatsoever.
They're not being dragged. They're moving. Oh, my God. That's a big thing. If the wheels moved...
In the process of putting it on the tow truck...
There's no guarantee that...
It all lines up. The murder could have taken place...
Anywhere.
Anywhere. So this is potentially really important, but I've only seen the front wheels moving. And they said in court that the handbrake was on. So I need to go and do some tests. I've got to go and find out whether the back wheels would move too. I'm trying to find out on a Peugeot 206, what happens when you've got the handbrake on to the wheels? What happens to the front wheels?
Okay.
First of all. Do they turn? Do they
the
move?
Front wheels will turn on that particular model, yes, because the handbrake operates for the rear wheels and the rear wheels only.
OK. And for the back wheels, if the handbrake's on?
The handbrake's on and the handbrake's efficiently and working correctly, the wheels will lock in a position and can't move with the handbrake being on.
OK. What if the back of the vehicle is lifted to go onto a recovery vehicle?
If you watch the vehicle,
yep.
It will start to lift. So if we winch her up, what's going to start to happen? The vehicle will start to pull up.
Yep.
Pull up. I don't really want to pull it much further than
sorry,
that.
Can you do that again? What I want to know is, does this turn at all?
We'll start pulling it, you know, and then it starts dragging.
Right, and then it moved a tiny bit then,
yeah.
Didn't it?
And if I drop the suspension down, you'll see your sign there will go back to normal. So I've not actually rotated the wheel. I'm pulling the suspension.
But it hasn't
up,
gone back exactly to normal, has it? Because that started off like that, didn't it?
It did drag a little
started
bit.
Started off
then,
straight and then it dragged a little bit. Doesn't not much, but
not
it did
much,
move a bit.
So I mean we go again.
So it looks to me as if now that we've done that, as if there is some movement with it.
Of course
there
will
it comes
be.
Back
pretty close.
Pretty close
pretty
to
close.
It being in line.
Yeah.
Well, that's disappointing. That would have been a massive breakthrough for us on the case. Now, there's already been a huge police investigation already, so to try and come up with something entirely new is really hard. But we've just got to keep on going. We're going to look for the next piece of evidence and we're going to see where it takes us. Interesting. I've had a text. I've had an anonymous text from somebody who says that you can, and I quote it, attest to Kearney's vile, volcanic and uncontrolled temper. Kearney is an extremely unpleasant individual under the velvet cloak. Try not to be his next female victim, professionally or otherwise. I don't know who this is from. Hello.
Hello, Louise, it's Roger.
Hello, Roger. So I've been receiving texts from somebody anonymously. as they can attest to Kearney's vile, volcanic and uncontrolled temper. This is a very specific thing this texter is telling me. Anything, think hard, because if I hear it from them and I don't hear it from you, that's going to alarm me. Is there anything you think that they might tell me about that would explain why...
I cannot imagine any situation the way that's suggested.
OK. You sure?
Yeah.
Let me tell you the last bit of it. Kearney is an extremely unpleasant individual under the velvet cloak. Try not to be his next female victim, professionally or otherwise. What do you think about that?
What do I think about that?
Yeah.
I think it's a load of rubbish. The whole lot is a load of rubbish. Somebody obviously doesn't like me. And is obviously trying to put a guy kibosh on the investigation.
Why would they do that?
Because they don't like me.
The one with Paula wasn't the first affair, was it? I don't want you to name names, but you had had an affair before that, hadn't you?
No.
No?
No.
I'm thinking of you having an affair with somebody while you were with Carol. Only a year or so before you started the affair with Paula.
Not affair. I haven't had an affair.
You said you...
I was friends with women.
Yeah, no, you told me about that before, but not sexual relationships with women.
I've not had any sexual relationships with any women.
You told the police you did.
Did I?
You did?
Oh, hang on, yeah. Yes, I did, sorry. What was her name?
So are you now saying you did have sex with
her?
Yes,
I did, yeah, sorry, yeah.
Well, how could you not remember that, Roger?
Because I don't know, no idea. I've forgotten about her. Because it obviously didn't happen. But... it wasn't a relationship, it was like just a couple of times I saw her. Yeah, I've forgotten all about her. Not me.
Are there any issues about any temper or violence or anything that you are ashamed of that I'm going to hear from somebody else?
No.
Are you sure? Because you're answering me very quickly, just like you did when you said, no, I haven't had any other affairs.
I'm not a brilliant man. I know I had two affairs. You might think badly of me for that, but I am not a violent person.
You know, if you'd said to me, no, I haven't had any affairs...
Well, there you go.
And then I hadn't... No, just let me finish. If you'd said that to me, as you just have done, and then I found out from somebody else you'd had an affair, I would take a very dim view of that.
Yeah.
Tell me now if there's anybody that I'm going to hear something bad from, and if you think of anything over the next few days while you're sitting in your cell on your own, then you need to be straight with me, because I'm going to hear it, I'm going to find it, I just need to know it from you if you want me not to have a very bad view of it, whatever it is.
No, I don't think you're going to find anything. I know you, because I'm not that sort of person.
The reasons why people have affairs are none of my business, and, you know, I don't need to hear any justification why you did. All I'm interested
in... I'm not trying to justify it.
No, but all I'm interested in is whether or not you're being straight with me. It's horrible when you push somebody, and then you sort of push a little bit, and then they finally start giving you something back. That really worries me. But I think, to be fair... I mean, I don't know why on earth he would have lied about that to me, knowing that he's already admitted it to the police. I mean, come on, he knows I've got the police interviews. So it's just an issue for me in terms of, is he trying to be clever about what he's telling me and what he's not? And is he trying to dupe me?
Roger Kearney told the court he had an affair with Mrs. Poulton because he thought she wanted a bit of fun and that he went along with it. Nigel Pascoe QC told the jury they may find Roger Kearney's conduct unattractive. He said there's a word sometimes used, love rat. But he added there's a world of difference between a court of morals and a court of law, between having an affair with a man's wife and killing.
Are you worried that Roger might be lying to you?
Oh, he could well be, absolutely. I mean, people have lied in the past, and they will again, I'm sure. If I find out that somebody has lied, then I would just drop the case immediately. That's the golden rule. I have said to him right from the very start, I'll follow the evidence wherever it goes. If that shows that he's innocent, good. If it shows that he's completely guilty, then so be it. You know, I'll follow the evidence. I'll keep going until I get to the truth.
It's 8 months since 40-year-old Paula Poulton was found stabbed to death in the boot of her own car. Police divers search for clues to catch a killer, picking out items as small as cigarette lighters, hoping that clues lie hidden beneath these quiet waters. In particular, they're looking for Paula's car keys, her mobile phone, and one of her flip-flops.
It's strange that some crucial evidence was never, ever found in this case. They never found her mobile phone, and they never even found the murder weapon. But the anonymous texter said that I will find out that Roger Kearney could have burnt evidence. He says in the text that it's a bonfire night that Roger Kearney went to, and the allegation is that Roger Kearney got rid of evidence in the white-hot braziers at this bonfire night. I need to find the green space where the bonfire could have been held, and I need to find Pete the Trees. I have absolutely, literally no idea who Pete the Trees is. Can you tell me? I'm looking for somebody called Pete the Trees.
Well, come round, I'll phone it for you.
Will you? So I don't know if you can help me. This is going to sound a bit odd. I'm trying to find somebody who's called Pete the Trees, who apparently is somewhere here on Stoneham Lanes.
Outside Stoneham Lakes is a tree bloke. He cuts trees.
Possibly to do with a fishing club or a diving club.
Or you had the Christmas tree man.
Right.
That was my mate down the road, so.
Okay. All right, I'll go and check
fish
it out.
Up there.
Okay.
Me and
the
mate fish up there.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
So what are you looking for now?
Church. Is that it? Gosh, I'd never have come down here, would I, if I hadn't spoken to him? It's all making, you know, it all fits. Oh, here we go. Private. Warning, covert CCTV in operation. Private land. Oh, it's all private. By any chance, Pete?
Yeah. Everybody seems to know me as Pete the Tree. Yeah, I just don't know why.
I'm doing an investigation about a murder case. A woman was killed and she was found in the boot of her car.
Was it near a railway station?
Exactly.
I remember that, yeah. I remember that.
I got an anonymous text who said, you should go and speak to Pete the Trees to see how easy it might have been to completely incinerate the missing physical evidence in the white-hot braziers of his annual fishing club bonfire. The knife, you know, that was used in the murder.
Well, I would have found that when I clear up. I would have found bits and pieces like that, anything metal.
It's strange because it's such a lot of detail in it.
I can't see anything going on here because I'm here from when it starts till when the fire goes out.
He was called Roger Kearney.
Roger who?
Kearney, or Kearney. Let me show you. I just need to do two things. I need to find a picture of him.
I might know his face.
Here he is.
I don't recall seeing him at the barbecue.
Has there ever been anybody acting strangely, suspiciously? Has anybody ever spoken about somebody who was a bit odd?
No.
All right.
Hi.
Thank you.
Come on,
I'm very pleased to meet you. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Anonymous text has really wasted my time. Everything that I've checked out doesn't stand up, doesn't go anywhere at all. I think it's just vicious gossip from somebody who is trying to be meddling. So that's the end of it.
So what now?
I really don't know whether Roger is innocent or guilty, but I do think that after looking again at all of the evidence, there are really strong reasons for the judicial system to look at this case again. But getting that to happen is not going to be easy. The only way you can get back to the Court of Appeal again is to go through the Criminal Cases Review Commission, the CCRC. You need to try and convince the CCRC that there's merit in the case.
We've been referred to as a safety net, as the backstop, as the last opportunity, as it were, to get a case back to the Court of Appeal. The CCRC receives about 1,500 cases per year. We refer approximately 33 cases for a new appeal. The case has, of course, been through a jury of 12 people who have decided upon guilt. So inevitably, coming to the Commission, there has got to be new material. Now, that is a difficult hurdle to cross over. It is crucial that that occurs. The role of organisations such as charities is hugely important. However, they've got to present us with logical reasons for referring the case to the Court of Appeal. Well, if there is nothing new, then the Court of Appeal aren't going to change their decision.
The courts don't like overturning convictions. It's difficult for them to do so. So you have to find something that's legally new. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being here, everybody. So our advisory panel meeting this afternoon is to look specifically at the case of Roger Kearney. It'd be really great if the main aim today is to go through the forensic evidence and to see what possibilities there are for us now in reviewing this case. If you see something on a photograph and you think and it something occurs to you of what could be done or might be done, can you just let me know?
Definitely the tapings. I really, really like the tapings.
I would have thought that it would be worth looking at those.
This is the picture, by the way, of the tapings. So these tapings were taken for the purpose of looking for fibres.
But obviously, if you stick a tape onto something and take it off, then
you don't just pick up fibres with it, you'll pick up biological material, potentially.
DNA?
Yeah.
There have been samples recovered from the back area of the knees of her trousers, under the arms of the coat, which are, you know, if I was going to lift someone into a car, I would put my arm behind the knees and around the shoulders and try and get them in there. So that seems to me a very proper place to look. So that DNA from the perpetrator is actually still happily sitting on those tapings.
Whatever was on there will be on those tapes. Yeah. The carrier bag.
We wanted to have another look at that.
This is the carrier bag, then, which was found in the boot underneath the victim's body. She'd been shopping at Tesco's, we know, just before she disappeared. Tracy, can you talk us through? You've done some work on this, haven't you? Talk us through what you found.
It's wet blood deposited on. And we think that there's some sort of detail in there that's from a male. I think it would be worth finding out who that male was.
Detail in Area 5, which is the one that you were discussing, was formed through a combination of wet blood on the hand and hand into wet blood already on the carrier bag. So it's a deposition of blood from the hand.
A blood-stained hand, which is then put onto the surface.
That's their opinion, yes.
They were able to say definitively not Roger Kearney's. There's a finger mark on there that's from somebody else.
Does that potentially tell us who the person is?
If it's wet blood on somebody's finger and that's been placed on the bag, that's somebody that's interacted with the bag after the victim's been injured.
I don't suppose any Y chromosome testing has been done, which would be important to try and pick up any male contact.
Could that be done in 2008? That's when this... They wouldn't have done it.
They're only just starting to do it now. So that would certainly be worth looking at.
That is a priority. The Tesco carrier bag is number one. Number two?
Tapings.
Tapings, all the body tapings.
All those body tapings.
So there's a partial fingerprint in blood on the carrier bag. The carrier bag that was bought by the victim not long before the last known minutes of her life. So we could have a murderer with blood on their hands who's touched that bag. And now we have the technology to identify that person. So what I want to do now is to find out whether Roger wants that work done or if he's going to start coming up with excuses. It's a final test, really, for him. So I need to find out whether he's willing to pay a lab to do this work. Then I'll find out whether or not he wants the truth to come out. If he doesn't, for me, that's the end of it. Hello.
Hello, Louise. Roger again.
Hello, Roger. Thank you very much for calling again. There is some potentially hopeful news. There was a fingerprint that went into blood on that carrier bag that was found with Paula's body.
Yeah.
So that's the next step. Make sure that all the possible forensic work can be done that is done. You want everything done, don't you, Roger?
Yes. Absolutely.
OK.
Yeah, I'm quite happy to play towards what I can.
Good. And what we're always, always doing is just trying to find the identity of the killer. I'm not looking for evidence to clear you, you know, as that's not the way I go at it. I go at it looking at, I just want evidence of who has done this.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I...
So I'm not asking closed questions. I'm looking to identify the murderer. And that's what you're prepared to fund, is it?
Yes.
Good. OK, Roger. All right.
So I didn't do it. So, yes, and if I can prove that somebody else done it... even if they don't get somebody else for it, but if the evidence shows that I wasn't involved, I'm quite happy to fund it.
Okay.
Hello, Anne. Nice to see you again. Thank you so much for coming up.
It's a pleasure.
Oh, thanks very much for coming in today, you know, coming up to Birmingham for this today. It's brilliant of you to give your time and expertise to the case.
Good luck.
Yes. Hope you find your answers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
It is a cold day in Birmingham, but it's an exciting day because we finally got access to the forensic files from the time. Is there enough material left to find out categorically whether or not Roger Kearn is the murderer or not?
So, Anne, have you been able to find out any information about the one-to-one tapings?
They appear to have been destroyed. Unfortunately, they've been destroyed.
So those original tapings, the one that that we were sort of calling the eyewitness, if you like, the person who actually...
Yes.
Actually put the... They've been destroyed.
They seem to have been destroyed, yes.
Is that categorical? Is that absolutely definite that they've gone?
As far as I've been able to establish, yes, it is.
And that's something you've learnt today?
Yes, it is, yes. It doesn't look as though we will have access to those.
In a murder case?
They've definitely gone.
Who owns those?
Well, they're police exhibits. Maybe the police can give a fuller answer or an explanation, but...
But then don't the police retain them?
I'm afraid I can't answer that.
Well, this is a murder case, though. Why would exhibits have been destroyed?
Well, I've no idea what the police policy is on exhibits.
Do we know what's happened to the carrier bag?
No.
But presumably that would be a police exhibit too.
Yes. As would the clothing, everything. The handbag, the car tapings. They would all be police exhibits.
So we could be in a position where all of those key exhibits...
Are no longer in existence.
...that would hold the answer to who the murderer is, have been destroyed.
Yes.
Thanks so much for seeing me. It's a bit of a sort of an emergency. Okay. Right. So, Anne asked the question, where are these tapings now, hoping to do more work, and was told they went back to the police at the end of the investigation and they've since been destroyed.
Well, it doesn't really make any sense because you have to retain items that are taken as part of a murder inquiry. You can't just think, oh, well, we've done that, let's move on. That's certainly not my understanding. Obviously, I've never worked for that force, but my potentially naive assumption is that it's the same across the board, that there's a minimum amount of time you have to keep those things for. And I worked previously at the MPS, now I'm with the City,
at
the Met Police. That's absolutely... The 30-year rule is the thing that leapt to my mind with that. They'll certainly be kept for 30 years.
Yeah. Everybody I spoke to was really surprised that this had been destroyed.
If it's happened, and somebody must have made a conscious decision, somebody's got to sign a destruction order or something or other, and it's not common policy. Certainly for the miscarriage of justice cases that we've looked at before, there has never been any other case that we've come across where they say we haven't got them because we've got rid of them.
In order for the CCRC to effectively carry out a full review, it's clearly very important that material is retained. Somebody convicted of murder in the Crown Court, I would expect the material to be around for at least as long as that person is in custody. Now, if material does not exist, there's nothing we can do. We can't invent the material. We can't come to conclusions that is not based upon evidence. If the material has been destroyed for whatever reason, whether by mistake, deliberate or not, it doesn't matter. But if the material simply isn't there, then it is impossible to carry out an effective review.
We've had some bad news in terms of the exhibits.
Yeah.
We know that some evidence was sent back to the police. And we know that they've destroyed some things, which is pretty devastating.
There was a guy in Southampton who was convicted of a murder. He did 27 years and then managed to prove that he could not have killed this woman. Can't afford 27 years. I go to my deathbed saying the same. I did not murder Paula. I will deny ever doing it. I didn't do it.
That's finger marks. Why have we got the same 4-series number for all the tapings and things from the car?
I don't know. So when the carrier bag was examined for fingerprints, they took certain precautions during that examination and they recovered samples.
So what do we know about where the sample was last known to be?
Well, our last record of that sample is it was stored in a freezer within the Forensic Science Service. And from there, sort of, the trail goes cold, really.
So we're really interested in it, and it's next to ridge detail from a finger mark in blood.
The sample they took then is of the area we're interested in.
Well, it almost certainly is of an from the area that we're interested in.
So we have got a swab.
Correct.
So the only thing left is to find out where it is.
Precisely.
Establish where it is now.
Potentially, we've got something that at some point came from that bag.